Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, happy Wednesday, everybody. This is the AmeriChicks. I'm Molly.
And I'm Kim.
And we're just excited to be here with you 5 to 6 p.m. every Monday to Friday as you are driving home from work. Hopefully having a really great day, ready to catch up on some news. And we're going to talk about the most important things that should be on your radar as usual. Dissect them as right versus wrong instead of right versus left, because we don't really care about all that political finger pointing. We just want to make sure that the world is safe for us and our kids and future generations, and make sure that we have the ability to go after the great American dream, which is what everybody wants to come to America to do.
That's right.
And so real quick, we're going to do kind of a lightning round on current events. And then in the second and third segment, we're going to talk about electromagnetic pulse threats to America, the EMP. And then the fourth segment, we'll be talking with Susan Koshevar with CRBC about business bills in Colorado and how those might affect business owners and the ability to create jobs. Mm-hmm. So real quick, just thank you, Kimmy. Kimmy was not here yesterday.
And I missed you.
Sue Kenfield was sitting in your place.
Thank you, Sue.
Because you were at the Capitol.
I was.
Testifying.
Yes.
And you beat that bill. Thank you, Kim.
Well, it wasn't. It wasn't me.
It was all you. House Bill 1232. The new transportation infrastructure funding revenue bill.
Oh, the new bill. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
The one that the big bad boy that went down yesterday was House Bill 1242, and this was a billions and billions of dollars. It was a massive sales tax increase, and Molly, it was astonishing because. I don't know who put the dominoes in effect there, but they were just lined up. And there were 25 different organizations. Some of them were, you know, had self-interest in raising this massive sales tax increase because they would benefit significantly from it. Some of them were just really well representing people, and they were well-meaning because we have neglected our roads and bridges for so long. But there were 25 different entities, and most of them, you know, those people that were there, they were being paid to be there and in favor of this massive 17% sales tax increase. And so, you know, 25 of them all come in and they testify in favor of it. And then there were a number of individuals and, you know, different few organizations that testified against it. But the thing about it is I had to find somebody to cover my slot here on the show. I had to drive down there. I had to find parking. The meeting started at 2. It got over at 6:30. And that is difficult for everyday people that have jobs and are taking care of their families to do that.
Yeah.
And so anyway, it was in committee. It was in the Senate Finance Committee. And I have to say thank you to Senator Jack Tate, Senator Owen Hill, and Senator Tim Neville, because I am sure that they were getting enormous pressure to send this bill on. Now, I want to address what I think is going to be the narrative out there, Molly, and that is that, and we saw Senator Kagan and Senator Cort say that it was important to let the people vote. And what we had Doug Bruce on a few weeks ago, who was the architect of TABOR, which
is the Taxpayer Bill of Rights.
Right. And all that says is that if the politicians and bureaucrats and lobbyists want to raise our taxes, or if they want to incur debt that we're going to have to pay, they have to ask the people. And that particular amendment to our Constitution has saved Coloradoans billions and billions of dollars. So, you know, all these entities want to raise our taxes. 17% across the board. That hurts our poor. That hurts our senior citizens. That hurts our millennials that want to get out of their parents' basements and who want, you know, want to buy a house and they want to pay off their bills.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was going to, what would have happened is if 1242 had passed, that means that it would be on the ballot in November for the people to to vote on that. And so you see the politicians and bureaucrats saying, let the people vote. But then over here on the other side, you know, we were at that RTD meeting where there's this mobility choice blueprint that Denver Regional Council of Governments, CDOT, Colorado Department of Transportation, RTD now, as well as the Denver Chamber, have all kicked in $400,000 each. So they have $1.6 million for transportation options over here. Interestingly enough, in 1242, one of the buckets was transportation options. Now, people had assured us that there's no way that this $1.6 million was going to be going to, you know, for this big, massive tax increase. Well, I was born at night, but not last night, Molly.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, it was a really big deal when Senators Tate, Neville, and Hill had the courage to say, no, we're not passing that on because this isn't a road and bridge bill, which is what people care about. This is a big, fat, massive tax increase.
Yeah. And for more information on that, Kim wrote a really great article that actually came out in the Gazette this week. So check it out. And it's also on the AmeriChicks Facebook page as well to read.
Okay.
So check that out. It's a good deal. But basically, she said they were going to estimate over 20 years about $14 billion, but only $5 billion would even go to roads and bridges.
And not even that much was guaranteed.
And so obviously, we the people don't really like you raising much of our taxes. We don't like it at the state level, and we don't like it at the federal level. So I'm really excited and encouraged, Kim, to see that President Trump just came out with his proposed tax reform today. And it literally could be from now on. If this passes this way, we will have one page to fill out on our taxes.
Right.
It lowers taxes for the individual. It lowers taxes for businesses, not just the big corporations, but our businesses, like our businesses, Kim. Small businesses lowers all of those taxes as well. And it doubles the amount that that you can claim on deductions so that no longer are you going to be spending hours and hours and hours trying to itemize all of your taxes and all of your stuff, all these write-offs. Because as we know, all these tax loopholes and all these, you know, extra credits are really helpful to the most wealthy. They're not really helpful to the rest of us. So we are going to, it looks like we're going to level the playing field if President Trump's plan can be passed by Congress. Hopefully it will. If you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com.
Home is where the heart is. It's that safe place where memories are made, meals shared, and holidays celebrated. When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you need to work with RE/MAX award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 28 years. Karen is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Karen takes the time to understand your unique wants and needs and can help you make the best decision for you and your family. Give Karen Levine a call at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation or visit her online at KarenLevine@RE/MAX.net and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you. Every business needs great branding, an effective website, professional photography, and videos to promote their products and services. Normally, businesses have to find numerous providers to handle all this work while incurring substantial costs. That's where Desi On Demand comes in. You choose your budget, and you choose your services from Desi On Demand's menu. Kim Munson here. Molly and I heartily endorse the creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity that Brand and the founder of Desi and his team bring to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com, that's D-E-Z-I, or call 303-359-1255 and tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
It's complicated. Life, sometimes. Bookkeeping, sometimes. Taxes, all the stinking time. That's why you need to work with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. They offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company takes a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs. Tax day's right around the corner, so call the pros at Predovich & Company today. 303-791-3000 or check out the website at dpredovich.com. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you. Hey, this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. And, you know, it's Denver's Money Talk Radio, and we talk about things that really could affect our wallets and our finances. And
which is everything.
Which is everything. And anything and everything that the government does, anything they pass, the policies, pretty much affect our wallets,
yes,
which is
do.
A big deal. And we'll get into some stuff about the tax reform tomorrow with Brian Dmytrovic, who was one of President Trump's economic advisors during the campaign. So some good stuff's coming down the pike that way. But we also are going to talk about something that would affect our finances if we don't protect our power grid right now. EMP, electromagnetic pulse, is a threat, a really real threat that we face today in America. And if this knocks out our power and all of our electricity, this is going to affect
be a problem.
Everybody and everything.
I couldn't get my garage door.
Businesses, your car stops in the middle of the road. You know, schools are shut down. You know,
refrigerator,
grocery freezer. Stores, everything, right? So this definitely has an effect on your wallet as well as national security. So we reached out to a specialist in the field who just wrote an article on the topic, and we asked him to join us today. So, Peter, are you with us?
I am indeed.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time today. So Peter Kelly Detweiler, he wrote an article that was in Forbes, Failure to Protect the U.S. Against the Electromagnetic Pulse Threat That Could Make 9/11 Look Trivial Someday.
That's pretty scary.
Very, very, very scary. Peter's the co-founder of Northbridge Energy Partners. He's obviously an expert in this area. They help companies that are connecting assets to power grids. He's the former senior VP of Energy Technology Services for Constellation New Energy, and he has 20-plus years of experience in the energy industry. He's written in many, many industry publications. You can see him everywhere. And so we're just really glad to have an expert like you on with us today, Peter.
Thank you.
So let's thank you. Let's talk kind of, if you don't mind, from the beginning, if you wouldn't mind just explaining what is an EMP.
Sure. Well, let's step back and talk a little bit about how we found out about it.
Great.
So after World War II, when we had the Cold War with the Russians, both sides were testing nuclear weapons in the Bikini Atoll and places like that. And one of the things the U.S. did was we blew up a 1.4 megaton bomb 900 miles away from Hawaii, up in the atmosphere, just to see what would happen, because that's what people did back in the 60s. And it turned out that, as a big surprise to the United States, it blew out a lot of the streetlights and other equipment on the island of Hawaii. So the person who was involved with that, it's called Operation Starfish, he was asked then to figure out what was going on, because none of the physicists and scientists knew what had happened. His name is Dr. William Graham. So he became responsible for figuring out how we could weaponize this, how we could essentially turn this into a weapon that we could take out the Soviet Union before they might take out the United States. And what we recognized was that essentially if we blew up a nuclear weapon, we could create an electromagnetic pulse. This is very similar to what happens when the sun burps, if you will, when it sends out a big solar flare and we have an electromagnetic storm. And there have been electromagnetic storms in the past, in the 1800s, for example. There was one in the 1850s that was so intense that the telegraph lines amplified the radiation, if you will, sent it down the telegraph lines, set the telegraph machines chattering, and actually caught them on fire. In 1989, we had a solar flare that hit Quebec, knocked out power to the entire power grid of Quebec, put those 6 million people without power, and then that pulse was transmitted and amplified down the lines all the way to New Jersey, where it knocked out a transformer outside of a nuclear power plant. So we started thinking, how can we use this as a weapon against the Soviets? And they quickly recognized what was going on and started to figure out how can they weaponize it against us. So both sides figured out how to harden their military infrastructure so that if either one of us exploded a nuclear bomb up in space over someone else's cities, that they would at least have the ability to retaliate back. So that's the basic background premise we're starting from.
Now, let me just jump in here for people that just have started to listen. We are talking with Peter Kelly Detweiler. He is an expert on this very serious subject, the electromagnetic pulse. So, Peter, continue.
Sure. So, in fact, many people on listening may be familiar with Dr. Jim Woolsey. He was an advisor to President Trump during the campaign and former head of the CIA. He was on a radio show this morning talking about North Korea and the same issue that I wrote my piece about. I've been focusing, because after I started discussing this with some of the various scientists who were mostly started in the Reagan Strategic Defense Initiative and Star Wars, that whole thing, he started to get involved in it and look at it from another perspective. I was looking at it in terms of what would happen if you put a Scud on a tramp freighter outside of New York City, for example. In that case, you could launch, without detection, probably launch a rocket off New York City, explode one of these bombs 300-400 miles up above New York City. And what would happen first is all of our computers wouldn't work. Our cell phones would go dead. Our cars wouldn't start because they all have computers. And then very shortly thereafter, milliseconds later, that would be the E1, the first phase. E2 is like lightning. Surge arresters can catch that, so that wouldn't impact the power grid. But then the third part of it is sort of this warp in the magnetic field. And what that would do would be amplify across the transmission lines, and it would blow out our transformers and, in some cases, blow out our generating plants. And what that would do, it would take down the power grid over a lot of the United States, which then, in turn, would lead to a collapse of our financial markets. No food would move, no communications would happen, and there are some estimates, according to congressional testimony, you were talking about financial implications. We're way beyond that. We're talking about the United States being without electricity for up to a year and as much as 90% of the population dying of starvation.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah, this is not a joke. This is real existential threat stuff. So what Dr. Woolsey was talking about this morning was that the Koreans now have a number of satellites in low Earth orbit, and all they would have to do would be to put a small nuclear weapon into one of those and explode it over some place in the United States where there's critical infrastructure, and they could take out the power grid.
Mm-hmm. Now, Peter, also, you know, I read an article even just today, North Korea, that they do already have the EMP attack capability, and we know that they have already put a satellite over California, over the Super Bowl stadium this year. And that could have possibly, could that have had this ability? Could that have done an EMP on us?
Well, we don't know what they have up there. What we do know is that they technically have the capability. And that the challenge, and so does, by the way, Iran. And Iran has sent some weapons up where they've exploded them in high Earth orbit. And there's really only one strategic reason for doing that, according to the experts that I talked to.
Hey,
the real, you know,
Peter, it's Kim here. Our connection, we don't have a great connection, and this information is so important. How about if we have Don jump in here, and he can call, you can call in, or maybe there's a different line, because I want people to really understand what you're saying. So why don't we'll have Don give you a quick call back, and we want to get you back on, but we want every word to be so legible. So Molly and I will talk for just a minute while we're doing that.
Yeah, sounds good.
Molly, this is serious.
It really is serious, and you know, I'm really seriously worried because I see the North Korea stuff. So this article, check it out. It's WND exclusive. And this is, it's by Michael Maloff, former senior security policy analyst in the Office of the Secretary of Defense. And he's the author of A Nation Forsaken, who's warning North Korea already has the capability to launch nuclear attack on the U.S. because they can already launch missiles with satellites on it. And we know that because they did that over our stadium here during
right after the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And they can detonate it up to 300 miles above the Earth. And so they could really be a threat to anyone. So do we have Peter on the line?
Yes, I'm back.
Great. Okay. So we're talking with Peter Kelly Detweiler about EMPs, electromagnetic pulse threats. Okay. So, Peter, before we had to get you back on again, we were talking about North Korea and the satellite that they sent over here. So you're saying they could or could not, or we're not sure if they have the ability to put the satellite with the EMP on it?
Well, we know they have the ability because they already have satellites in low Earth orbit, according to Jim Woolsey, who's the former head of the CIA. Now the question is, have they weaponized one of those? So just to give you a sense, though, here's an excerpted summary from the 2008 report of the Commission to Assess the Threat to to the United States from electromagnetic pulse attacks. So this is to Congress. And basically it says, the electromagnetic pulse generated by a high-altitude nuclear explosion is one of a small number of threats that can hold our society at risk of catastrophic consequences. Should significant parts of the electric power infrastructure be lost for any substantial period of time, the Commission believes that the consequences are likely to be catastrophic and many people may ultimately die for lack of the basic elements to sustain life in dense urban and suburban communities.
Wow.
That's why it's so important. So, and the challenge is, if we're fighting a conventional war, we fight against an enemy that thinks and fights the same way we do. When you're fighting against somebody like North Korea that knows that they would lose in a, you know, in a tit for tat
conventional,
type of thing,
yep. Mm-hmm.
Then they fight asymmetrically, and that's what the real concern here is.
So, Peter, I mean, there are things that can be done to shore up our power grid. There are things that can be done to protect us against this, right?
Yes, there are, and the military has done them for a long, long time.
Okay.
So essentially, part of the conversation that I had in my research on this was talking to the folks that are involved in figuring out what these countermeasures are. And essentially, there are some experts that essentially say that if we were to spend on the order of $10 to $20 billion, okay, it sounds like a lot of money, right? But in the scheme of things, we spend $366 billion a year, so $1 billion a day on electricity. So if we spent 20 days' worth of money we spend on electricity, we could harden our grid by creating arrestors and other physical infrastructure that could shut these things off once they started to trigger a collapse of the grid. So also to just put that into context, we spend a whole heck of a lot more money every year just in ensuring our houses against fire and flood catastrophe. So it's not like we can't do it. We write $645 billion in annual life and health insurance premiums and $460 billion in property policies for property and casualty. We're talking $20 billion in comparison to that for something that is potentially life-threatening.
Well, and yeah, one other thing, Peter, that I've always thought was interesting, and I just looked this up again regarding that California high-speed rail train that's going to be going from, I think, San Francisco down to San Diego or something like that. You know, most people are going to fly. They're not going to ride that train. And the construction costs on that have doubled to $69 billion. You know, there's, you know, just a third of that money, and you can make sure that you've got the grid for the whole country, right, protected.
Correct. So the question then is, okay, why hasn't this happened? And the reason it hasn't happened is because the power grid, from a national security perspective, it's nobody's responsibility. It's not Department of Homeland Security. It's not the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. And it's not the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. Each one of them have some overlapping responsibilities to ensure various aspects
okay,
of the
Peter,
grid.
We're going to go to break because I want to hear this whole answer on why hasn't this happened, Molly. So we're talking with Peter Kelly Detweiler. We'll be right back regarding the electromagnetic pulse.
This is Molly with the AmeriChicks. My friend Susan owns the longest-standing drive-in movie theater in Denver, 88 Drive-In. Join them. Spend a beautiful evening under the stars in the privacy of your car or sitting on lawn chairs. Share buttery drive-in popcorn and other goodies with your family and friends. Admission's only $8 per person, and children under 12 are free. You cannot beat that one. Now playing The Power Rangers, The Fate of the Furious, and Get Out. For the most up-to-date information, like the 88 Drive-In on Facebook or visit the website 88drivein.com.
Hey, this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. You know, Denver's Money Talk Radio, we're talking about how an electromagnetic pulse could affect not only our lives, but also our finances, our communications, our food, our electricity, basically everything. Now, the interesting thing is that we have known about the EMP threat since the 60s, when the U.S. military exploded a nuclear weapon high above the atoll in the Pacific Ocean, and it affected the electric grid of Hawaii, which was 900 miles away. So we've known about this threat since the 60s. And we're talking on the phone right now with Peter Kelly Detweiler, who understands this threat. And right before we went to break, we asked the question, if we've known this threat for so long, why in the world hasn't our government done anything to protect our power grid against this real and present threat? So, Peter, please continue.
Sure. And one other thing I should mention, it's not just a potential bomb. So that solar flare that we talked about before, the possibility of a massive solar flare, the kind that happens once every century, there was one in the early 2010s that occurred, and it essentially shot off in a different direction, so it didn't head towards the Earth, but it was close. And there was a professor at University of Colorado who studies these things, and he basically said that had the sun been faced, had we been a little bit more in the line of fire, quote, we would still be picking up the pieces. So it's not just the military thing that we need to be protecting. It's the same material, the same techniques we need to use, but it's natural threats as well as, you know, man-made military ones. So okay. Why aren't we developing a response to this?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is we're starting to study it more intensely, which we should have been doing a long time ago. We understand what it is. There have been numerous experts testifying in front of Congress for a long time. And in fact, since 2011, representatives like, for example, Trent Franks, a Republican from Arizona, have been trying to address this situation. He sponsored H.R. Bill 668, the Secure High Voltage Infrastructure for Electricity from Lethal Damage or SHIELD Act, which would have directed the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that regulates all interstate commerce and electricity to enable emergency measures to protect the grid via a directive from the President of the United States. And it laid out how to get the money back, how the utilities would put that on the power bill and get the money back and so on. It never got out of committee. And up until now, they keep on trying to get this thing through, and they can't get it passed in committee. And the challenge is, beyond that, is you have all these different regulatory entities responsible for different civilian aspects of the grid, and Homeland Security up until now hasn't basically put its arm around the whole thing and said, we see this as an existential threat to the life and well-being of every American citizen, and therefore we're going to make this our responsibility. Nobody has yet done that.
And so you said that there.
Go ahead.
You said that there was somebody though, former CIA, who has been advising President Trump. Do you have any feedback on how those conversations were going?
No, I don't. When I heard him on the radio this morning, he was talking more about Trump's approach to North Korea, and he was in favor of a stronger approach because his belief, and again, he's a former head of the CIA, Jim Waldie, is that North Korea continues to move forward with all of its weaponry programs, and this EMP being part of the arsenal they could potentially use. And so he's in favor of us being more aggressive in our posture rather than sitting back and letting it continue to develop those capabilities.
Peter Kelly Detweiler, if we decided to do something about this, how long would it take for us to shore up this our power grids or harden our power grids?
You know, it would probably take a couple, I'm guessing a little bit, but based on the experts that I've spoken to, and there's a fellow named John Kappenman who consults the Department of Homeland Security, he's probably the expert on what you need to do. And basically, we're talking, you know, 3 years, somewhere on the order of 3 years, and, you know, a $20 billion investment to start to essentially secure all the transformers. There's about 2,000 large transformers. We've all driven by them, where those high-voltage power lines come in and you see all those gray boxes, you know, those areas. And then you've got to protect your power grids, as your power plants as well. And then some of them probably will go down in an event like that. So you've got to have the post-event scenario, which is basically how quickly do you take the functional pieces that are left and stitch them back together, black starting grids that are down with power plants that are off, essentially re-injecting electrons into the system so you can get up and going again.
So, Peter Kelly Detweiler, how can we put political pressure on somebody to get started on this?
So I think the thing to do is, if you go online and research this, not only it's surprising that there's in some ways not a lot of information, but in other ways there's a fair amount. For example, if you Google FERC, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, electromagnetic pulse, you'll see a report from the federal government about the estimates of the $10 to $20 billion to fix this thing. And there's other reports that you can look at. There are the reports, to the testimonies to Congress, et cetera. Once you find those and make yourself a little bit familiar with this thing, I think the next thing to do is what we typically do as an informed electorate. We talk to our representatives and the senators and say, look, you know, you have a lot of things on your plate, plenty of things on the legislative agenda. Small chance of this happening, but huge outcome if we get it wrong. Somebody needs to pay attention to this because it's not that expensive to fix in the scheme of everything, and it's a real critical issue to be addressing yesterday. Not, you know, already we should have had this fixed given the security situation we find the world in today. So
right.
We have to be picking up the phone and talking to our legislators and writing letters and informing us ourselves about this issue.
Okay. We are talking with Peter Kelly Detweiler, and there's just so many questions that are percolating here. He has this excellent article in Forbes that says failure to protect the U.S. against electromagnetic pulse threat could make 9/11 look trivial someday. This is really important information. We've got just about 5 minutes left. So what are the things, you know, many of our listeners, Peter, are those busy individuals, those busy women that are you know, at their jobs, or coming home from their jobs, carpooling kids. I think you've made a very important case that this could really hurt people. But in the next 5 minutes, what would you want our listeners to hear?
You know, I think what I don't want people to feel is afraid, to the extent that, I mean, there are so many things in the world today, whether it's climate change or hand-in violence or whatever, they can paralyze and have us do nothing because we feel disempowered. And what I really hope people do is say, okay, this is worth 10 minutes or 15 minutes of my time to educate myself about this issue, if for no other reason than I can scare the heck out of people at my next cocktail party. and I do, by the way. People look at me and go, I had no idea this existed. They almost don't want to believe that it's a real possibility.
The other thing about it, Peter, is there is a solution, and we need to get cracking on that. So
there is a solution.
Yeah. And so are you popular at cocktail parties, or how is that working out for you?
Well, yeah, I, in the sense that, yes, I offer someone, unlike climate change, where there's a solution, but it involves a lot more people and a lot more sort of disaggregated elements to deal with. This one is much more concrete, finite, and addressable.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's definitely a solution here. It's just coordination and political will necessary to make it happen.
Got it.
Peter, I want to ask a question. Would we feel it? I mean, how would we know it happened?
So that wouldn't.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Great question. What you would do is you'd be looking on your cell phone, all of a sudden you go, darn, my app's not working. Or, oh, I don't know what Kim Kardashian had for breakfast this morning. And the next thing you do, you'd go to your car and it wouldn't start. One of the people that I interviewed, a former CIA guy, he's hardened his car so that he could start it in an EMP.
Huh.
But then he's like, where would I go? You know, the gas station's not going to work.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to be functioning. And he did also tell me that probably a third of the people that were reading my article, if I were to track them, they live in Idaho and Wyoming and Montana because it's all the preppers that pay attention to
that
stuff.
Right. Now, what about, I would think maybe our hospitals probably have some sort of backup type generators, some sort of protection. Would hospitals be protected right now?
Probably not, because you've got all the electric. Well, no, they wouldn't be, because they've got every generator has electronics that start the thing. So essentially what this does is it strips away the electronics from everything. So your computers go first, and then your power grid follows shortly thereafter. The E1 wave takes out your computers, and the E3 wipes out the power grid. So tough situation to be in.
Well, just slowly starts going dark.
Yeah, you know.
So, you know, the other thing you could do is start to learn to hunt with a bow and arrow again.
Yes, cook over an open fire, and you're going to want to have a land, have some place to go, and maybe a bicycle and a place to get there. Hey, so, that's where those bike paths
are. So there was a goose crossing the road when I came over to the station
you
today.
You should have run over it. Yeah. You would have grabbed it on your way back out.
Well, my car won't work, so you're right. I'd have to have a bow and arrow,
yeah.
Right?
No, I sometimes joke for people, if your cell phone doesn't work, run into the store, forget the diamonds, grab the baked beans.
Yes.
Yeah. And that reminds me, my little brother, when I was a kid, decided he was going to run away. And so he packed his suitcase full of canned goods. About 5 minutes later, he came back and said, I forgot a can opener. So you're going to want to make sure that you don't have an electric can opener. Hey, Peter, yeah. we're out of time. We want to have you back. We've been talking with Peter Kelly Detweiler, an expert on electromagnetic pulses. So we'll have you back. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon. When we come back, Susan Kochevar with what's going on down at the Colorado State Capitol.
Guy Whidden, 101st Airborne, landed Normandy in the dark on D-Day 1944, was knocked out on the jump, woke up, a gun to his head. What happened next? If you love the AmeriChicks World War II project on Fridays and know a World War II vet, we'd love to share their story. We're in a race against time to gather as many stories as possible and as quickly as possible to preserve them for all future generations. So if you know a World War II vet or have that great World War II story to share, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com.
Hey, if you like what you're hearing from the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, chances are your future clients do too. Let us help you promote your business and fatten up your wallet. To feature your business on the AmeriChicks program, email us at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. We feature the most topical news and intriguing guests every weekday during afternoon drive time, 5 to 6 p.m., while you and your clients are enjoying the program on your way home from work. So become a sponsor today by emailing the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, at AmeriChicks@gmail.com. That's the AmeriChicks@gmail.com. Or visit us online at AmeriChicks.com.
Love. Hey, this is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. Thing. And you know what? It's Denver's Money Talk Radio. So if you're listening and you're a small business owner, this is the one time that you're really going to want to pay attention, because we're talking with Susan Kochevar. She's the chairman of the Colorado Republican Business Coalition. And what CRBC does is they monitor legislation at the state capitol that's going to have an effect on business owners, either to the positive or the negative. And they take a stance to tell the legislators, here's why we want you to either support or vote against it, because here's how it's going to affect people that create jobs, because we need jobs, really, really, really need jobs. So, Susan, welcome to the AmeriChicks.
Thank you.
Thanks for your time.
Absolutely.
So, if you don't mind, I'd really like to start. We have three bills that we're going to talk about. Could we start with Senate Joint Memorial 17-006, because it's concerning the transfer of federal transportation funding to the state. And I say this because, you know, as we know, Kim was out yesterday because she was down at the state capitol testifying against House Bill 1242, which would have brought a ballot to the people to vote to increase our sales taxes by 17%. Because they said they needed more money for roads and bridges. Of course, that money would have gone into slush fund buckets, and only a very, very small percentage would have even fixed our roads and bridges. So I'm glad to see that Senator Neville is doing something that will help roads and bridges, and that is this SJM-006. So do you mind explaining that kind of to us and where CRBC stands on it?
Absolutely. You're so right. That money just goes into a slush fund, and it's just spent all over the place and not on roads and bridges like it should be. So this is something that was brought forward by Tim Neville and Representative Leonard. And you're right, it concerns the transfer of federal transportation funding. This SJM bill is something, you know, that we really don't see very much of. And when you read through it, it's pretty interesting. It starts off with a lot of whereases. The state of Colorado must overcome a serious funding deficit to meet its obligation to build and maintain its roads and highways. Whereas every year the federal government collects hundreds of millions of federal motor fuel tax revenue from Colorado, and the most recent data available indicates that over $661 million was collected from Colorado and paid to the Federal Highway Trust Fund during 2015. So this bill goes on with a lot of whereases, and essentially what it boils down to is it says, let's stop sending this money to the federal government where, you know, it costs money to have that the money accounted for and administrated, and then it gets to the federal government and they take part of theirs and send it back to Colorado. So the part of money, the taxes that the Coloradans pay on their gases and things, gets filtered, and we get far less of it back than we've paid in. So is it a surprise that our roads and bridges are in such bad condition?
You know, Susan, I've heard this kind of this theory, and I'm going to just push back a little bit. Because I do agree that there's, you know, a significant amount of money that the federal government, you know, they waste and all. But I've heard people on both sides of the aisle say, well, we send money to them, but we don't get as much back as we put in. But, you know, when Ike Eisenhower put in the federal highway interstate highway system, you know, he'd come back from World War II. He'd seen the Germans had been, you know, they had this highway system that they could move troops. They could move, you know, commerce, goods, you know, across Germany. And we didn't have anything like that. And he realized that without a without an interstate highway system, if we were attacked, it would be difficult to, you know, move goods and services, troops, those kinds of things. So when we make the argument that we should get as much as we send in, you've got these states like Wyoming and South Dakota and North Dakota that are important to get, you know, goods and services across, but they don't have the number of people that's going to generate enough, you know, of that highway user tax fund money to make sure that that highway system is in place. And so I get the argument, but I'm still scratching my head a little bit. And I really respect your opinion. Just throwing this out, what do you think about that?
Well, one of the things that comes to mind is what has been attached to that federal money now. They are attaching things like speed limits and blood alcohol content levels for DUIs and all of the things, the strings that get attached to that money and what's supposed to be used for quickly become the problem. I think there might have been a better way just to make the arguments to the states to only build those highways and maybe some money collected that way rather than a top-down approach, because that money is just being spent willy-nilly now.
Well, and when the money comes back, I actually saw when I was on city council, they took they're taking anywhere from 20% to 30% of this gas tax money and putting it into bike paths and walking paths, you know, all this quote-unquote multimodal. I think we should make sure that that money goes to roads and bridges, too. We need to hold local people accountable as well.
Yeah, absolutely, because we've tragically seen a few bridge collapses, so obviously, the money isn't getting spent where it's supposed to go. It's a big problem. One of our board members, Brian Vanderkroll, wrote an article which will be on the Colorado Republican Small Business website and Facebook page. And I encourage people to go. It'll be up tomorrow to go look and read that, because his argument is this doesn't actually go far enough. You know, we send tons and tons of money to the federal government in the same manner for things, and it just gets wasted.
Well, I agree. I think keeping stuff right here at the state is really important. And so how do we do that? But we make sure that that federal interstate highway system stays, you know, in good shape. Those are probably the two things that jump out. But Brian is a great writer. I'll be looking for his article. So great. Thank you.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. So what's the next bill CRBC wants people to know about?
Well, it seems like the legislature is, or someone at the legislature is trying to micromanage rental properties, because last week, I believe we spoke about House Bill 1310, which tried to micromanage applications for renting a facility, an apartment or a home. And it really prescribed some certain exact things that landlords would have to do. So now we have House Bill 1312, which works with rental agreements. I'll read the brief summary here. When a written rental agreement is in place, the bill requires the landlord of a residential premise to provide each tenant with a copy of the executed rental agreement within 7 days of it being signed. Upon receiving any payment by tenant, the landlord must also provide the tenant with the receipt. Both documents can be provided electronically unless the tenant requests a paper copy. But this is just micromanaging. You know, CRBC opposes this stuff because, you know, it interferes with people's ability to contract. And
And if they don't do that, then the landlord could be sued, right?
There's all kinds of penalties attached to that. And, you know, always buyer beware. Contracts, you know, laws don't prevent things, but contracts do. So it just increases the burden on landlords.
Mm-hmm.
So we oppose this one.
Definitely. Okay. You probably have a long list. What's your next one?
I, I do. This is the last bill for today, but this is House Bill 1352, and this is to regulate student education loans. The summary says this bill requires that entities that contract with the federal government to service student education loans obtain a supervised vendor license from the administration of the Consumer Credit Code. So you've already got someone who has a contract with the government. Shouldn't they already supervise these contracts? Why do we need to license these people as well? It's just more busy work, creates another department.
Raises revenue.
And it
it expensive.
Yeah, it really does. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
$31,000 to the state revenue expense the first year and $31,000 in 2019 through 2020. So, yeah, it just expands government. There's so many of these.
And we have to stand against that. Susan, the work that you're doing with the Colorado Republican Business Coalition, taking the time to go through these bills, I mean, this is yeoman's work that you're doing on this. And you don't get paid to do this, right?
No, we're an all-volunteer organization. I have to say we've had tremendous participation on our Legislative Issues Committee. Every week there's 7 or 8 of us going through these bills. And it takes a lot of time. And these are very dedicated individuals with different backgrounds. And we really need that because everybody can talk about how certain legislation or bills or regulations will impact their industry. That's very important.
Oh, good. Good for you. And then you also, in your spare time, what do you do, Susan?
My real job. I own the 88 Drive-In Theater.
Uh-huh. And you are up and running, right?
We're up and running, yeah. We're 2 weeks into our 41st season.
Oh, congratulations.
You can find us at 88drivein.com or on Facebook. I'm pretty happy with that Facebook page. We have over 40,000 likes.
That's awesome.
Awesome. And so it's going to possibly be snowing this weekend. How do things look when that happens? People still get out there?
Sometimes they do. You know, we try to open. If we get enough people, we'll open and run. But we certainly run in the rain. And we'll have our same program this week. So we'll have Power Rangers, the Fate of the Furious, and a really cute kind of comedy horror picture called Get Out.
Awesome. Well, Susan Koshevar, chairman of the Colorado Republican Business Coalition, thank you so much for your time and for getting us up to date on the business bills that are down at the Capitol right now.
Thanks, ladies. Appreciate it very much.
Okay. All right. Have a good one. So we are going to have Susan on next Monday, and we're going to spend the majority of the time of the hour talking to her because there's only 1 week left with our Colorado General Assembly.
And the crazy stuff's coming out.
So it's all coming out. So pretty much the bills were already out, but it's just what's still left to go into another committee. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go really into detail on that. So if you're a business owner, you're definitely going to want to be listening to us next Monday. And then, of course, tomorrow we're going to be talking with economist Dr. Brian Dmytrovic about the new tax plan that's coming forward that Donald Trump just put forward. And what would that look like for us, for we the people, for regular, real, rank and file, actual workers.
And we are going to have a young woman on it's an exceptional story. Her name is Mercedes Roybal, and she has overcome a lot, and her story is inspirational. So we're going to have her on as well. So you're not going to want to miss tomorrow. But we talked a lot about the power grid today and national defense. And John Adams, back in 1815, said national defense is one of the cardinal duties of a statesman. So, elected leaders, politicians, I think you should be listening to John Adams.
That's right. This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim signing off. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 5 p.m.